The Victoria Police Force presents D-24. From the files of the Victoria Police, for the first time, come these true stories of unceasing war against crime, of day and night vigilance that protects our life and our property, and of the nerve center of the Police Information Bureau, D-24.
The time has come to decide, Tom. Are you with me or against me?
I'm with you, Arthur.
Right. Then here's your first tool of trade. A neat little automatic pistol in full working order.
This is the true story of a plan for crime. This is a true story from the files of the Victoria Police. Only names, place names, and dates have been altered. Arthur Welsh and Tom Baker were Englishmen. They didn't come to Australia together, and a more unlikely pair of companions it would be hard to imagine. Welsh was a clerk, well-educated and well-spoken. Baker was a labourer, who'd had the benefit of very little education, and who certainly lacked the polish and self-assurance of Welsh. In 1938, economic conditions had forced both of them to take jobs as farm labourers in South Australia. And so these two vastly different characters came together. But the event that really cemented their friendship occurred just after lunch one day in July. Baker, who was supposed to be working, was sitting outside the shed that served as his sleeping quarters when his employer came on the scene quite suddenly.
What the devil do you think you're doing there, Baker?
Eh? Oh, I'm not feeling too good, Mr. Marshall.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know. Must have eaten something bad, I think.
You don't get bad food at my place.
Oh, I didn't mean it that way.
Always full of complaints, Baker, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
Always trying to think of new ways of getting out of a bit of work, aren't you?
No.
Oh, yes, you are. You Englishmen are all the same, if you ask me. Come over to this country and think you can run the place. Well, you'll mighty soon find out that you can't run my place at any rate. Now, get on your feet and start working.
But, Mr. Marshall, I'm sick.
Sick me eye. Now, come on, get up.
I can't get up.
No? Then I'll give you a hand. Come on.
Leave me alone.
So, you're not too sick to struggle, huh? Why, you lazy, good-for-nothing little brute. I ought to beat the daylights out of you.
Let me go, let me go.
Go on, struggle. You'll get tired before I will. I'm too strong for you, me friend.
Hey, Marshal.
Huh?
Leave Tom alone, will you?
You mind your own business, Welsh.
I said, leave him alone.
I'm the one who gives the orders around here.
Maybe. But that doesn't give you the right to treat anyone like this.
Huh? And who's going to stop me?
Let him go, or I will.
All right. I'll let him go. In fact, you can both go. You're fired.
That's all right with me, chum. And the next time you pick on someone your own size.
Such as you, for instance?
I'm hardly as big as you, Marshal. But at least it'd be a bit more even.
You couldn't fight your way out of a paper bag.
Don't provoke me, Marshal, or I might have to teach you a short, sharp lesson.
All the same, you pommies. All talk and no action.
You wouldn't care to say that again, would you?
Just imagine I've said it again.
Okay, chum. Just stand out of the way a moment, Tom, my friend. This chappie wants action, so he's going to get it.
Don't fight him, Arthur. He's too strong. He'll kill you.
Well, Marshal?
I'm ready when you are.
Right. And don't say I didn't warn you.
Look out, Arthur. If he connects with one of those, you'll be done for.
If he connects? But your aim's not too good, is it, Marshal?
Yes, you're right.
Maybe yes, maybe no. Ah, that was close. You're improving. I think it's time to finish you off.
like this.
Good on you, Arthur. You got him.
All brawn and no brain. That's his trouble, my friend. No science.
Crikey. He's out cold.
Well, don't sound so worried about it, Tom. He'll recover.
We'd better carry him inside, hadn't we?
Certainly not. As far as I'm concerned, he can stay right where he is.
Oh, there might be trouble about this.
I shouldn't think so. In any case, we'll be miles away by the time he wakes up.
You mean we're getting out?
Didn't you hear our unconscious friend fire us both?
Yes, I did, but...
Well, he's hardly likely to change his mind after this, is he?
No, I suppose not.
So come on, my friend. Let's put our things together and make for the open road.
Well, we go.
That's something I hadn't thought of, but we'll finish up somewhere, no doubt. Come along, Tom.
I owe you something for what you did, don't I?
Forget it, chum. No doubt one of these days you'll be able to give me a hand when I need it.
Yes, I'd do anything.
But at the moment, there's nothing to be done. Except give me your companionship along the road. By the way, how are those aches and pains?
What aches and pains?
The ones that were stopping you from working and started all the trouble.
I never had any.
You mean you were just malingering, as they say?
Eh?
And just trying to dodge work.
Yes, I was.
You're a bad lad, Thomas. I like you all the same. And you know, I think we're going to get along very well together. I've got plans, Tom.
What sort of plans?
I'll tell you all about them later. But first things first, and the most important thing at this moment is to pack up and shake the dust of this place off our heels.
And that was how the partnership was formed. Tom Baker was amazed to find that under Arthur's veneer of affectation was a determination and an ability to fight. He did not realize what other remarkable qualities his friend possessed, and he was not to learn them in full until a week or so later, when the two men were talking in the small room they rented, when, after hitchhiking from the farm, they arrived in Melbourne.
Well, Tom, my friend, what have you to report for today? Any progress or not?
Not. I can't get a job anywhere.
Yes, I was rather afraid you'd say that.
What about you?
Well, I find myself in exactly the same boat. So the position becomes serious, doesn't it?
I'll say it does.
Tom, do you remember on the day we left the farm, I mentioned to you that I had plans?
Yes, I do, but you wouldn't say what.
Well, now the time has come to talk. The fact is, chum, that I've been putting you through a kind of testing period.
Eh?
What I mean is, we need the money, but neither of us is very fond of hard work.
Well, who is?
Oh, there are some people who believe in giving a fair day's work for a fair day's pay, but I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
I'd rather get it the easy way, if that's what you mean.
That's precisely what I mean. And in that point of view, I'm with you all the way. And so, Tom, let us put all thoughts of hard work out of our minds and start from there.
I wish you'd just tell me what you're getting at.
Oh, forgive me, John. Now, there are only two ways I know of making money without working. One is gambling.
Oh, yes? And what would we gamble with?
That's just the trouble. We've no capital. And anyway, gambling's a hazardous occupation.
Then why talk about it?
Only to show you that I've examined things from every angle, to give you confidence in me, chum.
Well, what's the second way?
The second way is a life of crime.
What? Are you going off your head or something?
Certainly not. Tom, believe me, we can make a good thing of this. We can make crime pay.
How?
First of all, are you with me or against me?
I don't know.
Then you'd better make up your mind, and quickly. Funds are running very low, you know.
Yes, I do, but, well, I've never thought of doing anything like this.
Haven't you, Tom?
No, I haven't, and I don't think I like it much.
All right. Then forget the whole thing. Goodbye, Tom. This is where we part company.
Eh?
I thought I'd found a companion, but quite obviously I haven't. So you go your way, Tom, and I'll go mine. I'll look after myself. and you go back to your old job of looking for work.
Now, wait a minute.
No time for waiting, Tom. There's time now only for action. You see this?
Where'd you get that?
If you were with me, Tom, I'd tell you, but as you're not, I'd have to keep it a dark secret.
I didn't know you carried a gun.
Until this morning, I didn't. But then I decided that if we were going into crime, we'd better do it properly. Look, I got one for you, too.
Well, I've never used a gun.
Nor have I. But I intend to learn how.
But you wouldn't use it seriously, would you?
How you misjudge me, Tom. Certainly I'd use it, if the occasion arose.
You're a funny sort of fella, aren't you?
I don't think I'd use the word funny, Tom, but I'm very determined when I make up my mind about anything. Very determined indeed.
Yes, yes, that's right, you are. And I reckon you'll go places.
You could come with me, you know.
Yes, yes, I could. Would you take me if I changed my mind?
You're quite sure you wouldn't get cold feet or anything like that?
Oh, no. No, I wouldn't.
You understand that I'd have to deal firmly with you if you did?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course.
All right, then. We're partners, Tom. You do exactly as I tell you, and we'll never have to work again.
I'll do anything you say.
Good. Then here's your first tool of trade, Tom. A neat little automatic pistol, fully loaded, and in perfect working order. Always carry it with you, chum, and always be ready to use it. Because one day, if we get into any really tight corners, we may have to shoot our way out.
And so the two men settled down to plan a career of crime.
Are you with me or against me?
I'm with you, Arthur.
Right. Then here's your first tool of trade. A neat little automatic pistol in full working order.
This is the true story of a plan for crime. This is a true story from the files of the Victoria Police. Only names, place names, and dates have been altered. When Tom Baker joined forces with Arthur Welsh to embark on a career of crime, he had great confidence in Welsh, but no idea just how thorough the well-spoken Englishman was. It was agreed between them that their activities were to be confined to safe-blowing. But Baker began to get impatient when things seemed to be moving rather slowly. And one afternoon, when Welsh took him to the northern end of Swanson Street, he showed his impatience.
Now look here, Arthur. Are we going to bust open some safes or not?
I shall get very annoyed with you, chum, if you continue to ask me stupid questions. Of course we're going to bust open some safes.
When?
When the right time comes.
And when's that gonna be?
When I say so.
Oh, you've been giving me that for days now.
And I shall go on giving it to you, my friend, until we're properly equipped.
I don't see why we can't just go in somewhere and bust open their safe just look out like anyone else would do.
You can't, eh?
No, I can't.
Have you ever heard of a place called Pentridge, Tom?
No, I haven't.
Then let me tell you that it accommodates a large number of men who just went in somewhere and busted open a safe without being properly equipped.
Eh?
And it's surrounded by high bluestone walls that ensures that those gentlemen stay there for the required number of years.
You mean it's the local jail?
Oh, you learn fast, friend Tom. And you wouldn't want to find yourself inside those high bluestone walls, would you?
No, I wouldn't.
Then learn by the mistakes of others and be guided by me, and we'll go on breathing the outside air.
Oh, all right. But what do we do about getting properly equipped, as you call it?
Well, first of all, we're going to let the government give us a free course in the use of explosives.
Eh?
You see this fine building here, Tom?
What about it?
This, chum, is one of Melbourne's most cherished possessions. You see what it says there? Melbourne Public Library.
We're going there?
We are. Today, tomorrow, and for several days to come, if necessary. Until we've read everything we can about using explosives.
You don't miss much, do you, Arthur?
I can't afford to miss anything, Chum, if you and I are going to stay outside those Pentridge walls. So come on, Tom. Restrain your impatience just a little longer, and let's take our first lesson.
Do you see what I mean about Arthur Welsh being thorough? The two men paid daily visits to the public library for several weeks, studying all the books they could find on the subject of the proper use of explosives. At the end of that time, there was very little about this subject that they didn't know, and they decided that the time was ripe for action.
All right, Tom. Tonight's the night.
You found a safe we can blow?
No, I haven't, but I found something far more important.
What?
Has it never occurred to you that we can't blow safes open until we have something to blow them open with?
Crikey, I'd forgotten all about that.
What would you do without me, my friend? Now, here's a list of the things we need. The jemmies and other implements for breaking into the various places won't provide much of a problem. I've arranged for a supply of those from a gentleman who's been drinking with me in the local pub.
You didn't tell him what we wanted them for, did you?
Not precisely. But then he wasn't the type to ask questions. The other things on the list are not so easy. Gelignite, detonators, fuses and so on.
Where did we get them?
From the storeroom of a certain quarry that I've had my eye on for quite a while. Fortunately for us, the owners of the quarry place their faith in a rather cheap and simple sort of lock. So tonight, Tom, we visit that quarry, break into the storeroom and help ourselves to whatever we need. And then, all being well, tomorrow night we blow our first safe.
Everything went exactly as Welsh had planned. And before very long, Melbourne was in the grip of a wave of safe blowings. Railway station safes seemed particularly to interest the men responsible. There was a good deal of concern at police headquarters.
Another safe blown last night, eh? Same offender?
Well, looks like it. Method was exactly the same anyway.
Are you absolutely certain everything's been done to check up on every safe blow we know?
Yeah, I'm positive of it.
And not one of them's looking a bit more prosperous suddenly or anything like that?
No, they're not. In fact, as far as I can hear, these recent blowings have got the underworld as puzzled as they've got us. Usually there's a whisper or a leak somewhere, but this time no one seems to know what's going on.
Then we're dealing with someone quite new to the business by the looks of it. Any safe blowers departed from other states recently?
Well, I've checked as far as possible. The answer's no.
Well, unless he changes his tactics and becomes careless, it looks as if we've got to actually catch him on the job, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And from what I've seen of his handiwork, I shouldn't think he'd become careless. Every job he's done looks like the work of an expert. And an expert who plans every move in advance. No unnecessary mess, no trail left behind.
All right. Then keep it the men on the beat and the patrol cars. Tell them to keep an even closer watch on the railway stations, to visit them as often as possible, and to investigate even the slightest irregularity. Whoever he is, our man's sure to blow just one safe too many. Sooner or later, we'll catch him on the job.
And that was why, in the early hours of the morning, patrol cars and policemen on bicycles and on foot might have been seen paying such frequent visits to suburban railway stations towards the end of 1938. And that was why a policeman in one of the cars suddenly called out to his companion as they came towards the Moonee Pond station.
Bob, pull up.
Eh?
Just stay here a second.
What's up?
I thought I saw the flash of a torch in the station. Look, there it is again.
Yes, I saw that.
Leave the car here and let's go. This might be the safe blower they've been after for weeks.
Yes. Best you go onto the platform from this end. I'll go round and come in from the other end.
Right. Go for your life. I'll see you on the platform. I wish there was just a bit more light. It'd be hard to see it. Ah, there's someone there now. Standing just outside the station master's office. I wonder what he's just standing there for. Got his back to me, that's one good thing. The only thing to do is to try and creep up on him. He hasn't seen me yet. Near enough to put the torch on him, I think.
Who's that?
Police here. Put up your hands.
Oh, Spear, I'll kill you.
Put down that gun.
No. Get caught in my scarf.
Put it down, I tell you, or I'll shoot.
You're not going to get me.
Stop or I'll shoot.
I've got it, Jack.
Good man.
Come on now. Might as well give in. Come on.
Not going to take me.
Don't be silly.
If I could get my gun free, I'd fix you.
That's enough. Stop it now. Take his gun, Bob.
The luckiest man alive.
Huh?
I had you cold. My gun hadn't got caught in my scarf, you'd be dead right now.
You really would have fired.
I did fire. Or rather, I pulled the trigger and the hammer got caught in the scarf. That's how lucky you were.
All right. Let's go back to the station master's office. Come on, this way. You go in first and see if you can find a light, Bob.
Right.
And don't you try anything, my boy.
Here we are.
All right, go ahead. Looks like we arrived just in time. That safe's all ready for blowing, isn't it?
Yes. We'd have been out of the place in 10 minutes.
We? You've got a mate, then.
You can find that out for yourself.
Get in touch with D-24, Bob. Tell them to send a car to search the district for the other man. Then we'll take this fellow into Russell Street. Now, look here, Welsh. You must know it'll be only a matter of time before we find out your address, so why not tell us now and save a whole lot of work?
You know, in ordinary circumstances, you could ask me where I live till kingdom come, and I wouldn't tell you. But I've been thinking about it, and I'm going to.
That's very sensible.
Oh, don't get the idea that I'm doing it to save you fellows time and trouble, because I'm not. I've got a very different reason.
Yes?
Yes. You see, I planned all this business down to the last detail. Every step was worked out, including the last one.
The last one?
Yes, the last one was to shoot our way out of any trouble. We were both agreed on that. And I did my part of it. I tried to shoot you. My scarf got in the way. But my friend let me down. He must have heard the noise we made and ran for it instead of shooting it out as we'd planned.
It's very wise of him, I'd think.
Do you? Do you indeed? Well, I don't. I think he's just yellow, and one of these days I'm going to tell him so. Because he's yellow, you caught me. So I hope you catch him, too. And just so you will catch him, here's the address of our room.
How long have we been in this room now, Bob?
Must be 2 hours at least.
Yeah, looks like this fellow mightn't come home at all.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? Still, we've got to stay here, just in case.
What do you reckon the time is now?
Yeah. I can't see my watch properly. But something tells me it's not much before dawn.
It'd be almost time for us to be going home to a nice, warm, comfortable bed, wouldn't it?
Yeah, almost. Oh, well, nothing we can do about it.
Someone at the door.
Yes.
Police here, put up your hands.
I'll shoot you first.
No, you won't. Grab him, Bob.
Come on there. And keep your head away from your pocket.
That's better. Hold him, Bob, while I search him. So you do carry a gun. And fully loaded, too. And this time, I think you would have used it.
Too right, I would have.
So we've been lucky twice tonight. First with your companion, now with you.
I'll say you have. I shouldn't have run away in the first place.
And that's what your companion thinks, too. I'm sure you did the right thing. Otherwise, you'd almost certainly be facing a very serious charge. Come on now. I'll take you into Russell Street.
And that was just about the end of the road for Welsh and Baker. Despite their weeks of study, despite their careful planning, and despite their determination to shoot their way out of trouble, their success was only short-lived. Surely their story is an object lesson to would-be lawbreakers. Crime is just not a paying proposition. Both Welsh and Baker pleaded guilty to several charges, and both were sentenced to lengthy terms in jail. Again, the police, working under difficulties, were to be congratulated for work well done. Let us, the people whose lives and property they protect for 24 hours of every day, cooperate with them whenever and wherever possible. Only names, place names and dates were altered in this true story. It was dramatized from the files of the Victoria Police by Roland Strong, who now says goodbye until the same time next week, when there'll be another true story in this series, D24, which is brought to you by the Victoria Police Force and produced in the studios of Hector Crawford Productions by Dorothy Crawford.